Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Swung on, a dribbler slowly hit down the third baseline. It's going to be an RBI single. Jose Ramirez may have hit that ball 35 feet. The Indians have grabbed the lead in game one of the World Series. All of this with two outs and nobody on. Inside, he hit him again! And the Indians take a 2-0 lead. Guyer led all of Major League Baseball in being hit by pitches.
Fowler waits. 1-2. Swing and a miss. He got him. Two down. Seven strikeouts through 2 2/3 for Kluber. Let's see if he goes back to the breaking ball. He does, and it's a swing and a miss on a ball down and away to get Bryant and end the inning.
That's pitching 101 right there. 101.
Eight strikeouts through three for Kluber.
Swung on, and there's a high fly ball deep left field. Does it have enough? That ball is gone. Home run, Perez. He doesn't know it yet, but the umpire down the left field line, Tony Randazzo, says so. And now the home run trot, and the Indians are in front 3-0.
Well, folks, sit back, relax for a moment. It's soon to be Miller time. The Indians with a 3-0 lead in the seventh. Corey Kluber will get a thunderous ovation. Tell you what, if Andrew Miller gets out of bases loaded, nobody out, he will never buy another meal in the city of Cleveland for the rest of his life. Miller's ready. The payoff pitch. Swing and a miss. Did he go around? Yes, he did. Got him on a slider. Tried to check his swing. At back foot slider. Got him again. How about Andrew Miller? Swing and a miss. Miller got Schwarber. Boy, he just keeps doing it, doesn't he? Miller has stranded five in the two innings he's worked. Swung on and blasted. Deep left field. Away back. Gone. Wow, what a game for Perez. Swing and a miss. Ball game. And the Indians have won game one of the 2016 World Series. They blanked the Chicago Cubs.
In these playoffs, he's been about as good as, you know, and we need him. And we're going to need him more. Because I thought he had more in him. I didn't want him to, you know, you start getting into, he was getting up towards 90, going through the middle of the order. That's when you really have to exert. Because we had Miller hot, because we're planning on bringing him back. I didn't want to overextend him. There is an importance on small ball, but you can't try to hit a swinging bunt. That's a little bit of good fortune. You know, then Guyer got hit, which he is really good at. And that happens to him a lot. He's up on the plate and he doesn't get out of the way. You know, leading up to that, you know, we took some walks. We didn't go out of the zone. So sometimes you get rewarded when, you know, when you have base runners.
Well, pitcher never asked me to. I think at this point in time, it's all about doing whatever we can to get four wins before they do. I mean, if that means pitch on short rest, then I'm more than willing to do that.
I've come a long ways. I'm just playing with a lot of confidence right now. I'm not trying to lose too much of the play. I'm just trying to control my emotions. First World Series experience, and trying to go out there and compete and try to get great leads up there and try to get a base and make something happen. And it's an unbelievable feeling.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What an unbelievable sports night we just witnessed last night, and welcome to the extravaganza as we relive some of that today while looking ahead to see what is in store for the encore. My goodness gracious, we begin at 10 minutes after 3 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader as we cover the World Series and beyond. Opening night in the NBA last night. Opening night for the Detroit Pistons is a-coming. We got so much to get into today, and we're really glad that you're a part of it. We got some great guests who are going to be joining us this afternoon. We're going to be talking here in about 10 minutes with Matt Lodi, who was there at Progressive Field last night for Game 1 of the World Series. And I wonder if the Cubs fans are still griping about the strike zone there for Corey Kluber that the home plate umpire employed last night. They were griping all night long. They were griping all day on Twitter today and on Chicago sports radio, saying that John Lester got squeezed while Corey Kluber got breaks and all of this nonsense. We'll see what Lodi thinks about that, since he was right there at the scene. about 150 yards or so away from that across what is known as Gateway Plaza out there in Cleveland at Quicken Loans Arena. Rick Nolan was on hand watching the ring ceremony and the raising of the banner for the 2016 NBA champions, the Cleveland Cavaliers. So Rick Nolan was there. We're going to check in with him and see what he thinks about how not only how that thing went, but the opening of the defense of the championship. Not just in Cleveland, where the Cavaliers took apart the New York Knicks with a methodical, surgical type of precision, but the way they opened up their defense of their championship by just watching the late game, the one that happened out there on the West Coast in Oakland, California, where the newly revamped and already pre-crowned NBA champion Golden State Warriors started their season with a 29-point home loss to the San Antonio Spurs. To say that that was a perfect sports night for just about all of us who don't like the Warriors and Kevin Durant and that marriage with the cocky Golden State Dubs, as well as those who are supporters of Ohio sports and Cleveland sports in particular, it was a great night last night. Then coming up at 4:40 today, we're going to talk also with Jason Candle, as we do each and every Wednesday right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, as the head coach of the Toledo Rockets gets set for tomorrow night's home matchup against OU. So really, really big show lined up for you, and we bring Jim Cushlin here as well. Cush, how you feeling?
I am feeling pretty good today, needless to say.
I'm looking at the forecast right now, and this is what it's showing for game number two out there in Cleveland. Light rain up until about 6:30, 59% chance. They moved it up with good reason to 7 o'clock, first pitch tonight, instead of 8 o'clock. And by the way, once again, where can people hear that game on the radio in Toledo, Ohio, Jim Cushing?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you can hear it right here on 106.5 The Ticket, with everything being moved up. As soon as Mike Miller is done with his 5 o'clock hour drive time, we're going to take you straight to the World Series.
And where else can people hear that on the radio?
Not very much else, anywhere else, as I can think of.
Kind of thinking that we are the exclusive home of the World Series on Toledo Radio. So if you are looking forward and you don't have a TV screen in front of you, you're going to find it right here and nowhere else on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But so that game has been moved up, as everyone knows by now, to 7 o'clock. 7:08 first pitch, I think, is what they're looking for.
Yep.
Just like they had 8:08 first pitch last night. Corey Kluber a little tardy in warming up. They actually started that game at 8:10 last night. I don't think anybody complained. But I'm looking at the forecast right now, and it shows overcast skies starting at about 6 to 6:30, and that's a 15% chance of rain still in the air, but 85% chance. I'll look at it on the bright side, quite literally. 85% chance of being precipitation-free up until around 10:15, 10:30. That's when it looks like light rain is being called for again. So there is a window in between rain, I don't want to say rainstorms, but in between periods of rain. That window is exactly what they've moved the game time up toward to 7 o'clock tonight. So hopefully they can play this thing in 9 quick innings, get done, and out of there by 10 o'clock before the rain. And when the rain comes, by the way, it won't stop. Again, according to the forecast I'm looking at, it will continue well into the deep overnight out there in Cleveland. So,
and at this point, I'm going to, you know, throw this out there, because part of what they're doing, Major League Baseball, they want to avoid having to suspend it and then use the travel off day tomorrow, because since they instituted a rule in 2008 for basically for playoff games and for the All-Star game, if necessary, if weather comes into a factor, like is of course very possible tonight. Now they don't play shortened games. They'll play the full, even if that means suspending it. And that's actually happened twice since then. One was game 5 of the 08 World Series, when the rains came in Philly and a tie score. Phillies would then take the lead the next day when they resumed and won the World Series 4-1 over Tampa. The other one, and Tigers fans will know this one very, very well, 2011 Division Series, Game 1 in the Bronx. The rain started pouring in New York after an inning, and they suspended it until the next day, which meant Justin Verlander and CeCe Sabathia only pitched an inning, which is also why they were able to both come back in Game 3 of that series. So that type of scenario has happened twice, and Major League Baseball is attempting to do what they can in their power to make sure, let's not suspend games and use the travel off day, because if they don't finish and the rains come, Bob, this game will be suspended until tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, the travel wouldn't be as bad in this particular series.
Right.
The distance from Cleveland to Chicago is only, you know, about 6 hours by car. Very short trip by flight. or roughly anyway. You know, it's not like it's Cleveland going to L.A. to play the Dodgers.
Right.
Or vice versa, you know, or you know, East Coast to West Coast or whatever the case might be. In Chicago, by the way, if you're wondering, everything looks pretty doggone good for Friday. I'm looking at the Chicago forecast, 65 degrees and clear. So that's great for game number three if things, you know, go according to plan by getting this game in tonight. Saturday and Sunday look dicey, though, Jim. In all 3 days, obviously, are in Chicago. 52% chance of rain on Saturday as I look at the Chicago forecast. And most of that is at night, 52% starting at about 6 o'clock. So, you know, right into the prime time area.
Yeah, I noticed that, too, and immediately thought of our Cubs guest we had on, Al Yellen, yesterday, saying, you know, it would really be nice. One of the games at Wrigley should be in the day. Yeah, are you hearing us, Major League Baseball?
And the baseball gods are saying, you know, it's going to be clear during the day. Well, you guys want to move that one up about 6-7 hours instead of 7 o'clock? Can we play that one at like 2?
Right.
That would be nice. And then you wouldn't have to worry about the rain. At any rate, Sunday, same thing, 51% chance, although that one is in the morning, and it should be, could be, and should be clear, and around 60 or so by...
And if they need it to, and if because of one of those games, if they need it to, Halloween is also a travel day between a possible Game 5 and Game 6. So they would push things back to there if something happens in Chicago.
Yes, indeed. So hopefully everything will be, you know, a status quo, situation normal, not all blanked up with getting in game number two tonight. And the question now, of course, is will the Indians essentially lock up and secure the 2016 World Championship by winning game number two tonight and going up 2-0? In World Series history, if I heard the statistic right this morning on Mike and Mike, only two teams have been able to come back from 2-0 deficits, 2-0 deficits to win the World Championship. And both of them were New York teams, the Mets and the Yankees. And that means if the Indians are able to salt this one away, it's just all a matter of waiting and planning the parade route.
Curious, wow. What year was the Yankees one in that?
They said it this morning, and I didn't write it down.
Because I do remember from my baseball history that the one and only Brooklyn Dodgers World Championship in 1955, that they were down 2-0 to the Yankees, I recall, in that series, and I'm triple-checking right now.
Yeah,
yes, they were.
I don't have it committed to memory, and we're going to take a timeout now anyway so we can get Matt Lodi on the phone to talk about what it was like inside Progressive Field last night, game one of the World Series. I do know this. The stat that I gave you before the series started about rust versus rest, the team that won their pennant first and had a longer rest period before the World Series started has lost 7 straight World Series and 9 of the last 10. That has now been superseded or trumped, if you will, in this political season by this stat. The team that won game one of the World Series has won the last 13 World Series. So those numbers are completely changing the outlook here as we get ready for game number two. So we're going to take a timeout right now. We're going to get out to Cleveland and talk to Matt Lodi, who was at Progressive Field last night, who will be back at Progressive Field. He's probably there right now with first pitch coming at 7 o'clock. But we'll check in with him and get a report from the Fall Classic. Game one is the Indians. Game number two belongs to Drone Boy tonight. We'll see what happens. We'll talk to Lodi coming right up after this. On ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Rolling on, are we? It is 3:22. Thanks for joining us this afternoon right here on The Extravaganza. We are Toledo Sports Leader, and we will be opening up our leading phone lines at 866-240-1065 in just a bit. But right now, we want to talk more World Series, get a feel for what happened last night in Corey Kluber's dominating start in the Indians' 6-0 shutout win over the Chicago Cubs in Game 1, and maybe a little preview of whether or not they're going to have to dodge raindrops to get tonight's Game number 2 in. Matt Lodi covers the Indians and all sports out there in Cleveland for the Associated Press and also for the website NEOSportsInsiders.com. Mr. Lodi, good afternoon. How are you?
Trying to stay warm, Bob. It's not.
Are you at the yard right now?
I'm in my car. I'm actually in the parking garage in my car because I just went out to the ballpark for a few minutes and I had to run back to the car to get some things. So
okay.
I could tell you that it's not baseball weather. I could tell you that much, but I can tell you that based on everything that I've heard and based on everything that I've seen, they're going to do whatever they can to get this in because I don't know if you know this or not, but tomorrow is supposed to be even worse than today as far as the weather is concerned in Northeast Ohio. So with that being said, and obviously with them trying to get 7 games, a potential 7-game series in, in, what is it, 10 or 11 days, they need to get this thing moving. And there is a real concern for the weather here tonight and tomorrow. So it's the reason why they moved it up an hour, which I gave them major kudos for. And it's a reason why I think tonight you're going to see those umpires, you know, wagging their fingers a little bit, like, let's go, you know, and when this thing gets underway. I don't care if it's the World Series or if it's the first game of spring training. Mother Nature dictates this, and obviously this has always been the reason why I've said that baseball should start 2 weeks later and then 2 weeks earlier, because I think you would cut the percentages of these bad weather games in East Coast markets down 60-70%, but they're not going to listen to me, and they're not going to do that anytime soon. It's just my, you know, my way of getting on my soap dish about why Major League Baseball starts way too early and ends way too late.
I have done this. I've said the same thing on many occasions, and they don't listen to me either. Can you believe that? A guy, two guys of our
you know,
class, How about
two Harvard graduates like ourselves?
But what is your solution to that? How do we chop 2 weeks off the front and the back end to get this thing by mid-October? Are you talking about the doubleheader return, or
I mean, that's a great
shortening
idea.
The season or what?
Well, shortening the season, you know, I mean, you look back into, you know, the crystal ball of even 30, 40 years ago, which isn't all that long ago. I mean, come on. I mean, it's, you know, they used to play games. I remember American League and National League Championship games, first of all, starting in the afternoon, which I know that that's never going to happen again just because of television ratings. But also,
I loved them, by the way, when they did.
I did, too. You'd come home from school and the game would be on at 4 o'clock. But I also remember them starting earlier in the year. So, I mean, I just think that as much as sports keeps getting pushed further and further away from where they were 30, 40 years ago, the potential for, I don't want to say bad weather, but certainly in baseball it is. I mean, the other sports, they don't care. I mean, Super Bowl always usually gets played in a warm weather climate. Basketball doesn't matter because you're indoors anyway. But it just seems like the longer these things drag on, and the more it's like, you know, it just gets, it's just, you get kind of, you know, it's like it wipes you out. You're drained by the time this is over. And we can say the same thing about the Cavs and their title run in June. That thing seemed to last forever. The Stanley Cup is another prime example of sports that gets pushed too long. But to your original question, I don't really know if there is a solution, and that would be for people a lot smarter than me to figure out how you take 2 weeks off in April and 2 weeks off in September and start the playoffs around September 25th as compared to, what is it this year, October 6th? Sixth or fifth, I believe, is the first game of the postseason.
I don't even know, quite frankly, I don't even know if you need to go with a whole month, two in the front, two in the back. How about one in the front, one in the back? And just start.
That'd be fine, too.
I think it would really change things a lot. And that's a great conversation I think we can have during the off season. In fact, because right now I want to talk about what's going on in season. What a dominating performance last night by the Indians all the way around, but obviously particularly Corey Kluber, who set not only a World Series record, but they quickly clarified that on the TV side where I was watching it last night. I don't know if they had this where you were in the ballpark, but that eight strikeouts of his first nine hitters, eight strikeouts in the first three innings that Corey Kluber did last night is not just a World Series record. It is a baseball playoff record. Any postseason game, whether it be a wild card game or a division series or an AL or NLCS, eight strikeouts in the first three innings had never been done. It just so happens that it happened in this World Series. So it's not only a World Series but a playoff record. Straight up dominance. Now the question I have for you is again on the world on the TV side, we're seeing things, we're seeing replays. We've got the box there, you know, the digital box and all that other nonsense to see whether or not the calls were accurate. Doesn't seem to be that way for Chicago fans who see things with through a different lens than Cleveland fans might, because they've been griping for the last 12 hours or more that the strike zone for Corey Kluber was expansive and the strike zone for John Lester was minuscule.
Yeah, and I read and heard the same thing that you're hearing. And, you know, again, I don't think that it was necessarily a wide strike zone to the point where Kluber was getting, Kluber was getting calls. There was no doubt about it, at least very early in the game. I think the concern for Chicago fans, and it's somewhat of a legitimate gripe, was that Lester wasn't getting the same calls. And it certainly, you know, hurt him in that first inning. And I think that's the inning where you really saw him get a little bit rattled. I look at the play of the game, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, you're down, or I should say, if you're Lester, you're up 0-2 on, you know, basically, let's just be honest, the guy who's a lifetime 230, 250 hitter in Brandon Guyer, and you hit him with the bases loaded. I mean, I just thought that play just took so much starch out of it. You get out of that inning and it's 1-0, and it's, you know, even though you're going up against Kluber, it's not that, especially with that Cubs lineup, which is a really potent lineup, it's not that bad. But boy, you hit Guyer like that and you're down 0-2 and you're up 0 again, up 0-2 in the count if you're Lester. That just seemed to take a lot of wind out of their sails. The Perez homer, again, you could kind of live with that, the first one, that is. And then by the time you get to the second homer, I knew once they did not score in the seventh inning, that game was relatively over. I just didn't think that Andrew Miller had his best stuff last night. He just seemed to be a little bit off. He wasn't getting calls either, by the way. So
no,
Cubs fans, you know, let's just throw that out there. There was at least two or three calls that I saw that I thought Miller had struck somebody out or gotten a second strike that he didn't get it. And they worked more walks out of him last night than I think he had given up all the entire postseason so far. So, you know, there were some variables last night. I was a little confused by the Jason Hayward benching by Joe Maddon. I thought that was odd. I'm interested to see where they go in the catcher position tonight because Ross was not very effective. If they go with Montero, if they go back to Contreras, and
actually, I thought Ross had a pretty good game. Actually, I mean, he had the flub throw on the first stolen base by Lindor, but then he gunned him down the second time Lindor ran, and then he also had a base hit. He swung the bat and had a couple of pretty good at bats as well. So I mean, Ross, being a 39-year-old guy, I thought actually played pretty strong for them. I wouldn't necessarily think he was part of their problem.
Well, I guess I just go back to the strikeout, you know, of Miller, because, you know, he talked a lot about that after the game, and that, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed about. Everybody strikes out right now against Andrew Miller, it seems like.
Yeah,
but
no doubt.
I just thought, obviously, that was a key spot in the game where, you know, you got a guy, a veteran guy, he knew the slider was coming and just he obviously couldn't do anything with it. So
right.
I don't know, you know, at least from what I'm reading, doesn't appear they'll go back to him tonight, but we'll see. But, you know, some interesting decisions tonight by Joe Maddon and that Cubs, you know, the Cubs coaching staff, because, you know, let's face it. I mean, honestly, I know all those numbers last night, guys like Jason Stark and company put out about, you know, losing game one and how big of a thing of it is, at least in recent history in the World Series. But at the same time, you know, the Cubs really can feel good if they can get out of here with a win tonight. They really can, because going back to Chicago, you know, three games in the Windy City where you played pretty well. And, you know, otherwise, if you lose tonight, you're in the same boat like Toronto, the same boat like Boston, more so Toronto, of course, because it's a longer series. You've got to win two out of three just to get back to this ballpark again, to have a fighting chance to get to a game seven, you know, so that's going to mean a lot. I mean, I think that, you know, the Indians look at this, you know, collectively, hey, they could say, hey, if we can win tonight, we can, I don't want to say it because I don't want to jinx it, but you can almost slam the door on making sure that no matter what, you're going to get back to Cleveland to play at least one more day.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And this is one of those weird things. Well, first of all, just to make a point on Lester and on Kluber, because that was the first thing we started talking about. According to the analytics, and this is the computer tracking of the actual strike zone, and this is what every umpire undergoes after every game. The home plate umpire last night, he had a 93% grade. 93% of the calls on balls and strikes that he made were correct, which was his third highest total of the season, which means he's on his game. That's a great, great statistic. He was on his game. He was making them correctly. And according to the same analytics, I got this from Mike and Mike this morning, 91% of the balls and strike calls to Kluber or from Kluber were accurate. 86% from Lester were accurate. So even if it seemed like Kluber was getting more calls than Lester was, it was minuscule. I mean, both of them were right within 0.5% or 5 percentage points of one another. That is a very, very minuscule number. It might have been two or three pitches that would have been the difference between the two. So anybody who is complaining that Lester got squeezed and that Kluber got some big wide break, they're just barking up the wrong tree. They're looking for answers as to why this powerful lineup could not hit Corey Kluber, who, quite frankly, was at the top of his game last night. He was painting corners. He was hitting spots. He was throwing. I mean, he was running it back in on comebackers and trailing it away against guys based on exactly, you know, what he knew he needed to do against each hitter. He obviously had a great game plan, and he was just quite frankly executing perfectly yesterday. So I just want Chicago Cub fans around the country to acknowledge this is not a homer situation. The umpires had no reason whatsoever to benefit Corey Kluber, and in fact, according to the statistics, the difference between the two pitchers was so minuscule that there's really no argument there. The second thing.
Well, and let me just say, I'm sorry, Bob. Let me just also add, I like to read opposing newspapers, you know, like the Sun Times and the Tribune.
Yeah, I've been looking at the Tribune all afternoon.
And if you look at the quotes from players like Ross and guys in that locker room last night, there was a lot of credit paid to Corey Kluber. I mean, they didn't want to take away anything from what he did tonight. You know, it was, hey, it's one game, but, you know, they kind of almost conceded like nobody was going to hit Corey Kluber last night. Before, again, Cub fans want to, you know, start the conspiracy theory and all this other junk, just listen to your own players. You know what I mean? That's to me what it's almost more important there.
Yeah, I totally agree. And really, to their credit, they're not the ones complaining. It's mostly Cub fans and members of the media, including some in the national media, that are suggesting that there was some sort of a break there given to Corey Kluber. So I want to make sure to clarify that. Now, as far as game two, you know, and being a must-win game for the Cubs, I totally agree with you. And it's also one of these situations where I just don't like baseball. And what I mean by that is the way baseball has done this. First of all, games one and two should have been in Wrigley in the first place because they had the best record by 9 games over the Indians. Bud Selig really screwed the pooch, in my mind, when he made this ridiculous all-star rule that games decided by other players from other cities get to determine who gets home field advantage in the World Series. It's in an exhibition setting. It's just the dumbest thing ever. I'm glad that the Indians have home field because I want them to win. But I can promise you, if the Indians had 103 wins and the Cubs had 94 and the series was starting in Chicago and not Cleveland, I'd be livid. Having said that, problem number two, Matt, with the way they schedule is the 2-3-2. If you squeeze one of the first two out in this series, which Chicago could do tonight, you never have to come back. You got three in a row in your building. And I think sometimes that three in a row in your building is more of an advantage than two and two on the front and back end. Because you can literally close it out in your own place and never have to go back. And that to me, and especially when you look at some of the statistics, at how much better Chicago is at home than they are on the road, that's enormous. Tonight could be the deciding factor for them. They get a W, and they may end up making this a short series.
Well, and the way that, you know, again, I saw those numbers last night, you know, the last 6 game one winners have won the series, the last, 17 of 19, I think it's 86% over the last 25 years or 20 years who have won game one. There is one interesting stat for Cubs fans today that you want to hang your hat on, and that is they're the first team to get shut out in the past 50 years, the seventh team to get shut out in game one in the last 50 years. Out of those 7 teams, 4 of the previous 6 that have been shut out in game one have won the series. So I just kind of got blown away by that. So in other words, if you get shut out in game one, 4 of the last 6 have come back and won the whole thing. So, you know, and this Cubs team, I brought up a lot about offensively in the postseason against good pitching. They've not hit the ball all that well. I mean, Kershaw, Hill, now Kluber. I mean, they've been shut out 3 times already in the playoffs, and the Indians pitching has been so good. But again, you've got to wonder what you're going to get from Bauer, you know, what you could potentially end up getting from a guy like a Danny Salazar if he pitches. You know, for the Cubs, they've got to be like
that. Hey, Matt, before you go into what Bauer could do tonight, just a point of reference, too. You're right about them being shut out 3 times, but they found their offensive groove in the last 3 games against the Dodgers. They scored 8, 10, and 5 in those last 3 games. So, this was a lineup that came in feeling good, that came up against Corey Kluber sitting there on 6-7 days rest or whatever it has been. So a huge amount of credit to Corey Kluber. He didn't come in here and lock up a struggling offense overall. I mean, you're right about the overall picture because of the 3 shutouts now that they have endured. But he came in against a team that was red hot offensively in their last 3 postseason games, including those 5 runs they put up against Kershaw.
Yeah, in that game 6 in Chicago. So, again, maybe it'll be different when they get Kluber in Wrigley in game 4. I don't know. But, you know, I guess a lot of things will play out before then. And also, the circumstances will. I mean, hey, will the Indians be up 3-0 like they were in Toronto? Will the Cubs be up 2-1? You just don't know. So there's going to be a lot of factors that play in. But, you know, going to tonight, I just think that, you know, if Bauer, like I was thinking about this earlier and I was reading up on it, of course, you know, I think the plan, and I really got to believe in the back of Francona and Mickey Callaway's mind, is if Trevor can't give you what he needs to give you, that's when you're going to look at Danny Salazar. And I've heard a lot more kind of scuttlebutt from national media thinking the same lines, that Danny Salazar could be that wild card, if you will, in this series as a guy. You know, they said he could throw 60, 70 pitches. Now, I don't know if I want to buy that or not. I think it's more probably like 40, 50, but that could still potentially give you 3-4 innings if he's having good innings, even at least 3 innings. So, you know, don't be surprised, in my opinion, if you see Danny Salazar at some point play a part, whether it's tonight or maybe even in game 3 over in Wrigley. I don't know. But it could very well be interesting if he ends up having to pitch in this series and pitch extensively.
You know, it is interesting. If he were to come out of the bullpen and pitch in a Bauer leaky finger scenario tonight, that certainly would be something. But I wouldn't put it past Terry Francona to not use him tonight in the event of something like that. Only because you know Joe Maddon is going to load up his lineup with lefties as much as he can again tonight against the right-handed Corey Kluber, who's a fireballer. If you've got to pull him, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back with Ryan Merritt to go that long 50, 60 pitches or whatever it is tonight and throw a lefty in there at an already stacked-up left-handed lineup, especially given what Merritt did in his first postseason start and only the second start of his big league career, and then save Salazar for a potential Game 3 start or Game 4 start after Tomlin if they decide to go that way. And we do know that Tito Francona said he plans to come back with Corey Kluber again. Whether that means definitely Game 4 or not, I don't know. But it might be an interesting cross-up if they're facing the heat from Bauer from the right side for a couple, three innings, however long he's able to last. And then
Merritt,
Here comes, you know, the big bender and, you know, the finesse of a Merritt against the left-handed lineup.
Yeah, and again, I think some of this also has to do, I mean, let's just face it, if the Cubs don't hit at the top of the lineup, it's not going to matter if you or I are pitching. You know, they were, you know, Bryant, you know, Fowler, Rizzo, they were terrible last night, and a lot of that, again, goes with credit to Corey Kluber, but expect the Cubs, I think, to be a little more aggressive tonight at the top of the lineup and try to get some of these guys, even if they're just working walks, which we know Trevor Bauer has been prone to do throughout his career, especially at Progressive Field. He's walked a lot of guys here, Bob, and I would expect those guys tonight to just be a little bit more patient at the plate and try to get some walks, you know, and try to get some base runners early, especially, again, the top of that lineup was 0 for 11. I think there were 6 or 7 strikeouts between the three of them. Bottom of the lineup wasn't bad. It was the top of the lineup that really killed Chicago last night. And if they had anything going offensively, it was at the bottom of the lineup. And this is such a good lineup. It is a very potent lineup. So if they can get some things at the top of the lineup tonight, I look at tonight anyway as being a high-scoring game. I think both these teams can score runs tonight. I just think it comes down to what pitcher ends up pitching better. And obviously, Arrieta's got the better track record, but he's been hit too. I mean, his cutter and slider has not been the same. It got better in September, but boy, just like Josh Tomlin in August, he had kind of a couple struggles there in the middle of the year where I think the Indians might be able to take advantage of that.
The last thing, Matt, because I know you've got to run. It's 3:40, but who was the MVP last night? Was it Kluber in the 6 innings of dominant work that he had with 9 strikeouts, or was it his battery mate with the 2 home runs and the 4 driven in? The defensive catcher who's light hitting, but suddenly became, a World Series hero with the 2 bombs last night.
Well, that's a good question. You know, the reason I'm going to say Roberto Perez is because it was so unexpected. I mean, you've expected this. You expected Corey Kluber to come out and have a good outing. You did not really necessarily expect Roberto Perez to do what he did. I mean, this guy hit about 200 during the season, 3 home runs. But as I was talking earlier with someone about, it's like, you know, give this guy a little bit of credit. I mean, this guy really just got thrown into the fire from a thumb surgery, basically. And he was still in the process of rehabbing when Gomes went down in that Sunday game in Minnesota. And the next day, Roberto Perez was behind the plate. So, you know, I mean, Roberto, I'm not saying Roberto's Carlton Fisk or Johnny Bench, mind you, but boy, oh boy, to be in that company to hit 2 home runs out of the 9 spot like he did last night, I give him the MVP. Not only did I think he called a good game behind the plate, and the reason I say that is because Kluber's the one that said that himself. It wasn't, you know, just, you know, you could see it, but I think he called a good game with Corey's help, but also just those 2 big hits. I mean, hey, let's be honest. There's nothing to say that you go in that 9th inning and it's a 3-0 game. You know, you get a hit or 2 off Cody Allen. Some things could have been very different last night. We saw it in the NL, what was it, the DS with San Francisco, what the Cubs can do late in games.
Right.
I was not comfortable at 3-0, but certainly once Roberto hit that 3-run homer, I think everybody kind of took a deep breath. So I give it to Roberto last night. But, of course, obviously Corey Kluber was dominant, too. I mean, there's no question.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So last thing before you run, who wins? Game? Is it 2-0 or 1-1 going to Wrigley?
The only reason I say the Indians again tonight, Bob, is because I just don't see, well, I shouldn't say I just don't see. I think Bauer, and even though Miller's probably not going to be able to do much, I think he can still throw. I think that you're going to get Shaw, Otero, and you could go back to Cody tonight. I just think the Indians will just get enough offense off Arrieta. I am not convinced that this guy's certainly the same pitcher he was a year ago as a Cy Young Award winner, and the Indians have been so good at home, and they're almost playing, I hate to say this term, but they're almost playing with house money. They're playing loose. They don't seem to have much pressure on them. I saw a tight Chicago team early in that game last night. I don't want to say the curse and all that. I don't really believe in that anyway. But at the same time, it's just looked like Chicago was a little out of sorts last night, and now all of a sudden they're starting to realize, like, hey, this isn't just another American League, you know, Punch and Judy team. This is a really good baseball team. So I think they're going to go to Chicago 2-0, and I thought that they were going to win this series in six, the Indians, and I had them winning games 1, 2, 4, and 6. I'll stand by it until something changes.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, here's the interesting thing if you're an Indians fan. They are 8-1 in the postseason this year, 8-1. That's a winning percentage of 88%. All they have to do now is play 500 ball over the next six games, and they're the world champions. Think about that. All you got to do is win half of the remaining six games, and you are the world champions. That has got to be something that makes you feel good. Matt Lodi, NEOSportsInsider.com, SportsInsiders.com, also the Associated Press radio side out of Cleveland. Thanks for the update from Progressive Field. Stay warm tonight, and we'll check in with you again soon.
I got my hat and mittens, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. It's football weather out there, no doubt about that, and they're playing baseball in it. I really we'll talk more about that, about what baseball can do, because I really like seeing the game played in its natural conditions, and it's a summer sport. I don't like seeing it being played in winter conditions, but it is what it is. All right, hey, let's take a quick time out here, but before we do, want to say congratulations to this week's High School Athletes of the Week, the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. For the girls, Clay Soccer's Carly Clare. Carly, or Clear, C-L-E-R-E, my apologies, Carly, scored two goals, one via penalty kick as Clay beat St. Ursula 3-1 in the district semifinal on Monday. Peyton Rigg had the other Eagles goal as Clay now faces Perrysburg on Thursday for the district championship. For the boys, Springfield sophomore quarterback A.J. Guichardo was 19 of 37 for 298 yards and three TDs as the Blue Devils edge BG 38-35 in overtime on Friday. The win gives Springfield a share of the NLL title, their first league title since 1994. So congratulations to the boys and girls high school, KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week for this week. All right, going to take a quick time out now, get a sports center, going to come back. We're going to get some calls going. We're going to talk about some NBA opening night last night, a little preview of the opening night for the Pistons as well as we continue.
106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, that's who we are, that's what we are, that's where we are. Thanks for being a part of it with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, the radio home for the World Series in 2016 right here. You'll hear Game 2 tonight. Coverage will begin right at 6 o'clock for the first pitch, which is around 7:08. It'll be right after drive time with Mike Miller, so make sure that you are staying right here. Game number 2 is going to have Trevor Bauer against Jake Arrieta. Jake Arrieta, by the way, not exactly shy about his confidence, and I guess that's okay. I don't mind when guys are confident, as long as they're not overly cocky about it. The question is does Jake Arrieta cross that line a little bit? In the Chicago Tribune, I don't know if you heard Matt, Kush, I was talking to Matt Lodi about this. Headline, you know, looking at the other team's papers, I read the Toronto Star, I think it was, during the Indian series against Toronto, and I'm reading, of course, the Chicago papers, too. Headline in the Chicago Tribune this afternoon, Jake Arrieta needs to back up the big talk with a big game. And I didn't even realize he had said this, but Jake Arrieta apparently said, and I don't know if it was before the World Series or if it was before the playoffs in general, quote, any team that faces me is going to be in trouble, period. Reminds me very slightly of Jose Bautista's Ryan Merritt's going to be shaking in his boots when he sees the experience and the,
right.
the awesomeness, and I'm paraphrasing that, of this lineup that Jose Bautista threw before Game 6 against the Indians. But Jake Arrieta said, any team that faces me is going to be in trouble. After all the big talk, writes Steve Rosenblum with the Chicago Tribune, Game 2 of the World Series on Wednesday would be an excellent spot for Arrieta to make a case for the 7-year, $150 million contract he's reportedly seeking. Big money goes to big game pitchers, not big talkers. And this is bigger than anything Arrieta has started in his career, even if the Cubs would have preferred not to give him the ball Wednesday night. Arrieta starting Game 2 because the pitcher the Cubs want in this spot, Kyle Hendricks, doesn't have full rest after pitching Saturday. It's quite a drop for the reigning NL Cy Young Award, but one befitting his 4.11 ERA this postseason. Arrieta's last playoff start was a letdown. He allowed two homers and four earned runs in five innings and a loss to the Dodgers in Game 3 of the NLCS. Cubs coming off a loss in that game the way they are tonight. They needed a stopper, and Arrieta wasn't it. However, Arrieta was solid in the NLDS prior to that against the Giants, allowing just two runs in six innings. He also hit a three-run homer in that game, if you remember, off of Madison Bumgarner,
right,
which is shocking, and left with a chance to win. But that was one of the games where Chapman, Aroldis Chapman, showed with what he thought of six-out save opportunities, not very much. So there you have it. Arrieta is going to be starting tonight, and he's pretty cocky and he's pretty confident. Meanwhile, Trevor Bauer goes for the Indians tonight, and we don't know what he is because we don't know what that finger's going to be made of. Is it going to be made more of twine or what's the silk or whatever it is? I don't know what kind of thread they use in stitches. Or is finger going to be made more out of muscle and flesh and blood and back to normal? 9 days of healing hopefully have promoted, you know, the closing of those wounds and those sutures being removed hopefully will not be, you know, that will not re-split if he puts too much pressure on it. Kush, I don't think the circumstances, however, could be worse for Bauer in terms of the weather. I would think warm weather would kind of tend to leave everything alone, but you know how your skin feels, you know, tighter and
sure.
drier? In weather like this, when it's really cold, I just hope that dry, tight skin doesn't start to pull apart, you know, a freshly stitched up wound.
Yeah, and the only thing that Indians fans at this point, Bob, can hope for is that, yeah, this has been enough time that even with the conditions tonight that it simply won't, you know, open back up. I still think back to that Toronto start, and, you know, everyone keeps thinking, or at least I've heard a few people mention to me, like, well, why would they have sent him out there in the first place? It's not like they didn't look, and none of that happened in any kind of warm-ups or pre-games or sessions the day before, but, you know, your adrenaline changes. You can't really truly simulate, even though, you know, we talk a lot about bullpen sessions and all that kind of thing, whether you're talking about Bauer or Danny Salazar, for that matter, but it just can't, you know, really replicate the true in-game situation, and that's why I've told people, look, it never opened up on him during all that before that first inning, so they thought they could wing it. And at this point, the only hope is that it's been enough time that this won't happen again. Otherwise, I'll be interested to see what call they make, go to Salazar or go to Ryan Merritt, as you and Matt were just talking about.
Yeah, and like I said, I really think it would be a little bit more beneficial. If you've got a right-handed fireballer, why replace him if he's got to leave very early on with another right-handed fireballer? Because that's the offense, or I'm sorry, that's the pitcher that the offense is going to have been putting
right.
in the lineup that's going to have been geared to
face. Yeah, force Joe Madden to make those moves.
Exactly. Bingo. That's exactly the point that I'm making here. So hopefully there won't be an issue, and hopefully not only will Bauer, and this is the other part of this too. We talk about whether or not Bauer's finger will hold up. How about just the arm, meaning how effective will he be? Remember, this is a very enigmatic cat. This is a guy who can look like Cy Young one night and look like, I don't know, Burt Young another night. Burt Young, in case you're wondering, played Paulie in Rocky. you know what I mean? I mean that's the problem with him. He can give you great starts, and then he'll go into a funk and just be all over the place and lack command and lack control. So, you know, how will the long layoff, since he did not pitch but two-thirds of an inning when he went in the ALCS, how will that affect his preparation and his ability to be on his game? That's the other part of the story. Hey, I know we're coming up here on the top of the hour, and we got to get out to get a sports center in, but I got to do this real quick. This is such a cool story that I just became aware of from the World Series, but specifically from Los Angeles. What? Well, here's the story. There's a Tribe fan living in Los Angeles named Ken Kostal, K-O-S-T-A-L, who was getting ready to get on a flight to fly from Los Angeles to Cleveland for the World Series. He realized, or he was made aware of the fact that Kenny Lofton, who was also in L.A., needed to get to Cleveland. He was throwing out the first pitch, and the flight was overbooked. Ken Kostal gave up his seat on the flight from L.A. to Cleveland, missing the World Series game so that the former Indian star could throw out that first pitch last night. The Indians, learning about this story, have given tickets to Ken for Game 6 if it is necessary. I think they need to go a little bit above and beyond that and give them tickets for several games next year, particularly whenever he can get out from Los Angeles to get back to Cleveland and watch games. But in addition, United, and this is the kind of cute part of the story, United Air is providing Ken Kostal with 62,200 airline miles for his use on a future flight. And that's in regards to Kenny Lofton's 622 career stolen bases. So
nice.
United Air has given him 62,200 airline miles. That means he's going to fly free a few times, I would think. I don't know exactly how the airline miles were, you know, divvy up in terms of cost. But that's going to be at least one free flight, maybe a couple of them. and the Indians game tickets. So just a really cool story. If it wasn't for a Tribe fan willing to make the sacrifice, Kenny Lofton wouldn't have made it for the ceremony yesterday. Maybe they would have had to call on Charlie Sheen after all to do the Ricky Vaughn thing, but obviously just a very, very cool story there. All right, going to get a timeout here now for the top of the hour. Before I do, Jim Cushlin, and I know we're a little bit tight on time here, but I want to get this done because we're going to shift gears and talk some basketball in a minute. Yesterday we talked to Bob Ibach, who is a former PR director for the Cubs now, and he now runs an organization in which they sell commemorative memorabilia for wonderful things like the Cavaliers World Championship just this past spring, and now for commemorating the Indians World Series appearance here. It's a three-ball set. They raise money. Proceeds from these sales go to the Boys and Girls Clubs of Ohio, and I want to say I think it's also in Illinois, but I can't swear to that, but Boys and Girls Clubs in areas around Ohio. And there's 5,000 of these three-ball commemorative sets. They're commemorative baseballs marking the 20 World Series, the 1948 World Series, and now the 2016 World Series. And if the Indians win this, of course, they will add the graphics to the ball indicating the championships in each of those 3 years. And they're going to be inside a commemorative case as well. It's just a wonderful thing. They're only making 5,000 of those, and he announced it yesterday. We neglected to do something even cooler than tell you about those and give you a chance to call in and order those. We neglected to give one away free right here. And so that's what I want to do as we go into this 4 o'clock Sports Center. 866-240-1065. Caller number 10. You will get one of those three-ball commemorative sets of memorabilia that you'll remember for a lifetime, especially if the Indians end up winning their third world championship in their history. So caller 10 to 866-240-1065. That will be yours from your friends right here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Back after.
Swung on a dribbler, slowly hit down the third baseline. It's going to be an RBI single. Jose Ramirez may have hit that ball 35 feet. The Indians have grabbed the lead in game one of the World Series. All of this with two outs and nobody on. Inside, he hit him again! And the Indians take a 2-0 lead. Guyer led all of Major League Baseball in being hit by pitches.
Fowler waits. 1-2. Swing and a miss. He got him. Two down. 7 strikeouts through 2 2/3 for Kluber. Let's see if he goes back to the breaking ball. He does, and it's a swing and a miss on a ball down and away to get Bryant and end the inning.
That's pitching 101 right there. 101.
Ooh, 8 strikeouts through 3 for Kluber.
Swung on, and there's a high fly ball deep left field. Does it have enough? That ball is gone. Home run, Perez. He doesn't know it yet, but the umpire down the left field line, Tony Randazzo, says so.
Tell you what, if Andrew Miller gets out of bases loaded, nobody out, he will never buy another meal in the city of Cleveland for the rest of his life. Miller's ready. The payoff pitch. Swing and a miss. Did he go around? Yes, he did. Got him on a slider. Tried to check his swing. A back foot slider got him again. How about Andrew Miller? Swing and a miss. Miller got Schwarber. Oh, he just keeps doing it, doesn't he? Miller has stranded 5 in the 2 innings he's worked. Swung on and blasted. Deep left field. Away, back, gone. Wow, what a game for Perez. Swing and a miss. Ball game. And the Indians have won game one of the 2016 World Series.
This is for you guys. This is all for you. You know, we put a lot of hard work and dedication in the last year, and it's always to know the saying that hard work pays off, and this is a true testament of it. And without you 20-plus thousand fans, this would not be possible, so... This night, none of us will ever forget. None of us, anybody in this building, anybody in this community, anybody in this state, anybody that got any ties to Cleveland and Northeast Ohio. You know, from this building to next door, where our guys next door opening the World Series. At this point, if you're not from here, live here, play here, dedicate yourself to Cleveland, then, makes no sense for you to live at this point. Cleveland against the world.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
not necessarily Cleveland against the whole world. Plenty of love coming from Northwest Ohio over there to the folks in Northeast Ohio, congratulating the Indians on their Game 1 win last night and, of course, celebrating the raising of that banner by the Cleveland Cavaliers last night. Yes, indeed. Cheering, indeed. Lots of Indians and Cavaliers fans up here in Northwest Ohio as well, and I really think there's a lot of good just Toledoans and Northwest Ohio fans of even other teams, including the folks up in Detroit, who are really going to be pulling for the Indians to get that done and take it away from the Cubbies again. Not too many people outside of the state of Ohio are going to be sharing that sentiment. Maybe White Sox fans. Maybe White Sox fans, because they have that natural enmity with the Cubbies fans. But that's
about the only group I can think of, too, Bob, outside of this little area that would be rooting against the Cubs would be White Sox fans.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, really, the rest of the country, I think, is most decidedly in favor of the Cubs. Anyway, we digress. We want to shift gears and talk about the latter part of what you just heard in that montage. And that was, of course, the raising of the banner, the presentation of the rings, and then the defense of the championship beatdown in the opening round. By the Cavaliers on the New York Knicks, a man in attendance there covering the Cavaliers as he has been for so many years on the Cavaliers beat, Rick Nolan joining us from Cleveland right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Rick, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Bob. How about yourself?
I tell you, I wish I was in your shoes last night. Well, quite frankly, I would have loved to have been out there in either one of those venues in either side of Gateway Plaza, but you got to witness something that no one has ever witnessed before last night in the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise, and that is the raising of the franchise's first championship banner and the first championship banner for any Cleveland team out there since 1964. Can you describe that feeling, Rick?
Yeah. First, let's just say it was a long day, Bob. I wasn't getting a whole lot accomplished at home, and I started getting antsy worrying about how bad the drive up was going to be. So actually departed a few minutes after 2 o'clock for a 7:30 game, thinking I was going to run into traffic. Well, lo and behold, 45 minutes later, I'm sitting inside a Quicken Loans Arena before 3 o'clock.
wow,
finding myself with
worst.
4 hours. Finding myself with 4 hours to kill. so I was actually kind of tired before the whole festivity even started. And then, from a work standpoint, there were just so many people, in Progressive Field and Quicken Loans Arena and Gateway Plaza that the Wi-Fi just refused to cooperate. You know, 9 different restarts and 9 different logins. I just kept getting kicked off of Twitter throughout the whole ceremony. So I wasn't in the greatest of moods from a personal work standpoint at that point. But, you know, the ceremony was enjoyable. I thought it ran a little long. I didn't think it ever reached a crescendo. I'm in the extreme minority in that view, by the way. And it might be influenced by the fact that I was kind of ticked off personally about the Wi-Fi and everything else.
Yeah.
But it was a really enjoyable evening. You know, and the game, quite frankly, it was an afterthought to begin with, but the Cavs played so well that it got to the boring stage pretty early in the third quarter where, you know, as a grumpy old journalist, you're just like, okay, let's just get this over with so we can, you know, get our stories done, make deadline, and watch the last couple innings of the Indians game. Interestingly enough, LeBron, I don't mean to babble here, but LeBron always keeps us waiting a good 20 to 30 minutes after every game, and he started his post-game interview finally when Andrew Miller was pitching with the bases loaded. And during the course of his interview, when Miller got the third strikeout to get him out of the inning still at 3-0, he actually just completely stopped his answer and said, "It's Miller time." So it was a pretty interesting moment. He was directly facing the TV in the other side of the locker room, so he had a better view than the rest of us who were kind of looking at him, and I was trying to kind of look out of one eye to watch the baseball game as well.
I thought you were going to have a nice story there. I thought you were going to say he normally makes you wait 20 to 30 minutes before he'll talk to you, but he knew that everybody wanted to go watch the Indians, so he came out right away.
No.
Not so much.
No. That some habits don't change. You know, it's just part of the job that you go in knowing that, this is how it's going to be. But, you know, what's truly great is after the wait, you know, when your mood is just starting to go a little south and you're worrying about deadline, he's always so fun to listen to. And you know, he's got an opinion on a lot of things, and he's willing to share it. He's colorful and charismatic. So, you know, it's not like you're waiting, you know, 25 minutes to get a couple cliches that you could have made up on your own. He usually makes it worth our while.
You know what? Interesting about that, Rick. Well, first of all, let me go back, since we covered a lot of ground there in that first answer. I also thought it ran a little long.
My answer or the ceremony? my answer was almost as long as the ceremony.
Yeah, well done. Well played. And maybe both. Maybe both. But I also thought it was a little long.
Bob, I'll talk to you next week. Time's up on this segment. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. But, as I thought it ran long, I thought to myself, am I being just the grumpy old guy saying, come on, get on with it? And so I kind of convinced myself, well, I can understand it going long. It's 52 years in the making for the city.
Correct.
And a franchise history for them. If they want to drag this out and show every hot dog vendor getting their ring, then by God, they've earned it. They've waited long enough if that's what they want to do.
They introduced people last night that I didn't even know were in the organization.
That's what I saw on the TV side, and it was interesting to say the least that they really, really did drag it out. And again, you know, why not? I mean, truth be told, we have no idea if it's ever going to happen again. You know, you just don't. There's
exactly.
Nothing you can take for granted. Look at the way the season opened last night for the new KD-led Warriors. So
we'll
cross that bridge in a minute. But to the LeBron thing about, you know, old habits never change. Do you know, he's been front and center, like, you know, pumping up the Indians during the Red Sox series. He was there during the Blue Jays series and you know, pausing yesterday during the postgame to talk about Miller time and so on and so forth. How much do you think he's changed in that regard? And I speak, of course, to 2007 in the Indians series against the New York Yankees, when he was a guest of the Indians, given, you know, front row seats or whatever they were behind the dugout, primo seats, as they would extend to VIPs like him. And he shows up there in a Yankee hat, flaunting it, opposing the Indians and supporting his Yankees. Do you think that the new, mature, championship winning in Cleveland LeBron, if this had been a series last night, not against the Cubs, well, let's go back to the ALCS, not against the Blue Jays or the Red Sox prior, but if it was the Yankees, do you think he's still rocking that Yankees cap, or do you think he's come around to be, quote, all in on the season teams?
Well, I think he's in that area, he's probably become a little more politically correct. Interesting enough, he was asked about that earlier this week. Was he still a Yankees and Cowboys fan? He had a really good answer. He said, yes, he was. And the reason he was a fan, became a fan of them to begin with, along with the Bulls, is that when he was a kid, they were winners. And he was a kid in the inner city without a father figure for a large portion of his life. He was just looking for inspiration, and he just latched on to winners. To show him that it was possible that he could be a winner. But he ended it with throwing his full support, behind the Indians. Now, if they were playing the Yankees in the ALCS, who he would be rooting for, I don't know. But I don't think if he was rooting for the Yankees, I don't think you'd see him show up with a Yankees, hat on in an Indians provided suite.
I think this is the more
mature, reasonable LeBron we're seeing right now. Yes.
All right. So even if he harbored those feelings for the Yankees, he would have kept them suppressed for PR sake.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be tweeting, you know, after the Yankees won, you know, take that Cleveland or anything of that nature at all. I think those days are long gone.
Rick, let's talk about what happened on the court. One thing that that I saw last night that he has not changed about is his midseason or postseason form. Starting the year with a triple-double with the 19-11 and 14 assists in 32 minutes. Really all of them. Kyrie with 29 points and 4 assists.
Right.
Kevin Love 23-12. I mean, that's just a straight-up dominating Big 3 performance, as good as any Big 3 really has been to start a season, to say the very least. It can't be that easy every night out. They won't play a team that is disjointed and trying to figure out who and what they are as the Knicks every night out. But my, oh my, what a great way to start a championship defense.
Yeah, I mean, like LeBron said, back-to-back triple-doubles. They just happen to be, 4 months apart. Kyrie had... he had 19 points in the third quarter on 8 of 10 shooting after a little bit of a rough first half. And I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of games like that from him this year. I think his own inner security has grown by leaps and bounds. He always had the outward bravado and the swagger, but I think now it's a true, legitimate feeling inside after hitting a game winner in game 7. He knows, win, lose, or draw, or succeed or fail, that nobody can ever take that away from him. And it's going to make him want to take those shots even more than he already did. And I think Kevin Love has the same kind of security, where there are going to be games this year where he may be a little bit forgotten. And, you may see an 8-point, 14-rebound game instead of 22 and 13. But I think we're past the point now where we have to ask, is this a legitimate Big Three? Do these three fit together? I think they fit together extremely well. All three are pretty selfless players. Kyrie still can have his moments of ball dominating, but in many ways that's what they want him to do because he is a scorer, and they don't want to take that away from him. So, this run could be pretty enjoyable for quite a few more years here.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. That championship win should be the beginning of something very, very special. But like I said, there's nothing that's guaranteed, and that's the reason I say, drag that thing out yesterday, because a lot of things that look like they could be and should be don't end up being that, including a team that won 73 games last year, not closing out a 3-1 NBA Finals lead. Nothing is guaranteed. And we'll ask you more about the Warriors' loss last night in a moment, but Jim Cushion has a question. Jim, go ahead.
And as I think about some of the other guys on this team, because obviously, Rick, it was one of the performances mainly from the Big Three, but obviously because you got garbage time, pretty much everybody got in there. So mainly a quick two-part question. One, your impression of some of the other newer guys on this team, i.e. Mike Dunleavy, the Birdman, things like that. And two, what's the status of Kay Felder? He was not able to play, and obviously he's in theory the main backup point guard to Kyrie, didn't play with a concussion. What's his status right now?
Man, that question was about as long as my opening response to the, okay. Let's do Kay Felder first. I think they're fairly optimistic that he's going to be cleared from the concussion protocol, process prior to their game Friday in Toronto. There's a real good chance that Iman Shumpert, though, could be in it, because he likely suffered a concussion last night when he ran into Porzingis' hip. With his head somehow. I don't know how much Kay Felder helps them right now, but he may have to play some if Shumpert's out. I don't think he was going to be in the rotation. They were going to go with Shump as the backup point guard until Kay gets a little more at ease and comfortable at the NBA level. Dunleavy, I thought, was quiet last night, but they didn't really need a lot from him. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Ty Lue uses him and Richard Jefferson, because they're basically both small forwards behind the MVP small forward. So we're going to see them on the court together sometimes, probably maybe even with LeBron, where they have three guys capable of playing shooting guard, small forward, and power forward, even for Richard Jefferson and LeBron for small stretches. Birdman was really quiet. I was a little bit surprised that he was the 10th guy off the bench last night and really did not play until late in the first half. So he may be the last guy in their rotation right now, but he's a guy that's good to have in your hip pocket in the playoffs when things get a little rougher and a little tougher and, you know, a little dirtier even. So I you know, their roster is deep aside from the backup point guard spot, which I think that they will likely address at some point during the season, but I don't think they're in a tremendous rush to do something now and have it not be the right thing. So that could play out for quite a while. But I think they'll have a proven veteran, legitimate kind of point guard, ball handler type player in here before the playoffs start, you know, before the trade deadline in mid to late February, actually.
Rick Noldens is our guest, Cavaliers beat writer, covering last night's season opening win over the Knicks and also the banner being raised to the Raptors at Quicken Loans Arena. Real quick, let's go to the other side. Everybody, I think almost everybody in basketball who covers the game is expecting a three-match in the NBA Finals between the Cavaliers and the Warriors now that they've added Kevin Durant to their starting lineup in place of Harrison Barnes. Quite a significant improvement. But with improvements like that, new faces, especially guys who like lots of shots, are going to take a lot of time to figure it out. They certainly don't have it figured out, losing by 29 in the season opener at home last night. How shocked were you by that? And are they a lock to figure this thing out and make it to their third straight finals?
What a clunker last night, huh? I mean, you're playing at home where I think they started 36-0 last year with Kevin Durant, and you get throttled. I saw on Twitter where somebody took a little joy in pointing out that they now have a four-game losing streak dating back to the last three games of the NBA Finals. So Cleveland's watching them. You can be sure of that. I still think they're the best team in the West. I think they played the second best team in the West last night, and they proved that they're not really ready to go anywhere. Kawhi Leonard looked like an MVP last night. It's possible his game may go to another level still. So I think those are the two teams you're going to see in the Western Conference Finals. I think ultimately Golden State probably figures it out and wins that. And there's not much doubt in my mind, barring really unfortunate injuries, that the Cavs should represent the East again. So I'd be pretty surprised. I'd be real surprised if Cleveland's not the representative from the East. And I'd be virtually shocked if it's not Golden State or San Antonio representing the West. With the Clippers getting an outside shot. But the West is not what it once was. And, you know, Golden State's still the best team out there until proven otherwise. Now, if these problems are still apparent 15, 20, 25 games into the season, then you start to get a little concerned if you're Steve Kerr. But they got a lot of talented players out there and you know, some pretty unselfish players when you get right down to it. So I think they will work it out, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as even I might have thought it was going to be when they initially added Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I agree. Their starting five is tremendous, and they've got a great six-man in Iguodala, but beyond that, they have lost a lot of depth, and I don't think it's going to be as easy as people think it is either. Doesn't mean they won't get it done, but it's not going to be as easy as all that. Rick Noldens, we're out of time, so we don't have a lot of chance to talk about some of the other teams in the division. The Pistons open their season tonight in Toronto. We'll catch you back on the air hopefully sooner rather than later, perhaps sometime next week, to talk about a little bit of a preview of the rest of the division and the Eastern Conference. But we thank you so much for the time you're able to put in today. Hopefully, it'll be a little bit more restful the next time you have to go downtown, all right?
All right, thank you much.
Thank you, Rick. There you go, Rick Noldens. He's out there in Cleveland. He covered the events last night, the banner-raising ceremony, also game one of the World Series. Game two tonight. You'll hear that where, Jim Cushlin?
Right here on 106.5 The Ticket, and so with the moved-up time due to the possible weather issues, that's 6 o'clock, so we're about an hour and a half away from pregame time already. So
if you're in Toledo or anywhere in the Toledo market in the entire Northwest Ohio area and you're looking for the game on the radio, this is the only place you're going to find it. If you get it on TV, great. If you're looking for it on the radio, you're going to have to find it right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. By the way, speaking of titles and championships, which they're contesting now tonight in Game 2 in Cleveland, how about the College Football National Championship, the Flyaway Contest? just ongoing. A chance for you, if you are the winner of the grand prize, to go to Tampa, Florida, January 9th with a trip for two, round-trip airfare, four-night hotel stay, two tickets to the game, rental car with parking, and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa, Florida. That's a $5,000 prize package. You could win that, or you could win the runner-up prize, a trip for two to the Michigan-Ohio State game at the Horseshoe, November 26th, with limo service provided. Third place prize is a prize package from Yuengling. All you got to do to qualify for this amazing contest is be the fifth caller right now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, or you can qualify online at 1065theticket.com, up to one time per day. Good luck to you. From Yuengling Lager, Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine, and your friends. That's us. At Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Coming up, after just a couple of minutes, we're going to cover all the sports. We did baseball. We did a little NBA. Now we're going to get to college football. Jason Candle, the head coach of the outstanding 6-1 Toledo Rockets. They play Ohio U in Maction Thursday night action tomorrow night. And we got Jason Candle coming up next to preview that matchup and talk about Logan Woodside, who is now the leading passer in terms of touchdowns in the NCAA Division I FCS this year. And he's one touchdown pass away from tying Bruce Gradkowski's single-season record for the Toledo Rockets in history. So we'll talk to the head coach of the Rockets coming up next right here on The Ticket.
Fans, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. Time to talk some college football. The Toledo Rockets 6-1 after a 31-17 win over Central Michigan at the Glass Bowl back on Saturday. Short, quick turnaround week for the Rockets. They get the Ohio Bobcats at the Glass Bowl, but that is tomorrow night on Thursday. And to help us talk all things Toledo Rocket football, we welcome in the head coach of the Rockets, Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. Always a pleasure to have you on. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, Jim. All's well.
Yeah, and right now it kind of is for you guys. 6-1, got another win, 31-17 over Central Michigan, but kind of a tight affair, especially in the first half, only a field goal managed. Walk me through some of what kept the scoring down in that first half.
Well, typical October MAC West football, you know, two, you know, really good football teams that, you know, tried to probably figure each other out for a while. And, you know, we had some self-inflicted wounds there in the first half that we just weren't, you know, you're not going to be able to overcome those, you know, each and every time when you start to play, you know, at this point in the season, because everybody in our schedule is, you know, good. And, you know, we have to be efficient. You know, we have to handle our own and make sure we're not making mistakes and shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, but give Central a lot of credit. You know, they got a good team, very well coached, very stout on defense, and, you know, a good quarterback that I thought for the most part in that game, our defense really did a great job of keeping him in check. You know, but like you said, it was a, you know, neck and neck first half. You know, the play at the end of the first half to get the fumble that went in the end zone as a touchback there was huge for us, and to, you know, to hold them scoreless going into the half and then be able to get the second half kickoff and go down and get a score. I thought, you know, that was big time momentum change there.
Yeah, and let's talk about that second half. Guys come out, you guys get a quick touchdown drive. Woodside with one of his four touchdown passes, first of two in successive drives to Cody Thompson, and suddenly it was 17-0.
Yeah, you know, those are big, you know, and we obviously the second one came via a turnover, you know, that we were able to capitalize and get points on, which was really encouraging. And, you know, but ultimately I thought we played a really good second half and were able to get a very hard, tough fought victory, you know, in front of a, you know, another great crowd in Glass Bowl.
Yeah, and it was another tough, hard-fought victory, and you're so right, because this West Division is very, very good. It's not just Central. It's not just Western. It's pretty much everybody at this point. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. They get a 31-17 win back at the Glass Bowl on Saturday, but a quick turnaround. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. Logan Woodside, it's starting to become almost another day at the office for him. 23-32, 264, four touchdowns, no interceptions. Talk about his day.
Another, you know, solid performance. You know, a really good job of taking care of the football. You know, he, you know, a lot of people don't know, but we played in the second half without three starting offensive linemen, and you know, it didn't look like it. You know, because of a lot of the things and him doing a good job of getting the football out of his hand being one of them, you know, and certainly, you know, him doing a great job of making sure our offense stayed efficient and, you know, playing with good tempo and, you know, doing a good job of getting, you know, us in and out of, you know, good plays or out of bad plays into good ones, so to speak. But, yeah, another really outstanding performance. Credit to that kid. He just keeps doing it week in and week out and been a rock solid from a consistency standpoint each and every week. And, you know, certainly if we're going to go where we want to go the rest of the way out, he's got to be able to do that for us.
And then there's Cody Thompson, 7 catches, 122. He caught all 4 of the Logan Woodside touchdowns. Talk about his day and his season overall, because he's an outstanding receiver.
Yeah, it's been impressive. You know, and he's, you know, certainly all the credit that, he is receiving is certainly well deserved. I mean, just a product of hard work and, you know, really, honestly, can, you know, a lot of adults, people, and college students, people in the world in general could take a lot of advice from that kid, because he just goes about his business, does it each and every day, and doesn't say too much to anybody, just goes about what he needs to do, and leads by example, and just really works. A lot of his hard work and effort, and those things are showing up now on Saturday afternoons. And I think, in a grand scheme of things, if our world just shut up and went to work every day and did what they're supposed to do each and every day, we'd be a lot better place.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets, 6-1 now overall in the season, 3-0 in MAC play after the 31-17 win over Central Michigan back on Saturday at the Glass Bowl. And I guess we can use this to transition into the next game you guys got, which is coming up tomorrow, actually, a quick turnaround week. And you mentioned a moment ago, especially in that second half, you were down a couple of offensive linemen. What's their status, and is it going to be tricky to get them back in there with the quick turnaround this week?
It is. A couple of them guys will be game time decisions, and we'll see what happens there. But, you know, certainly it hurts us not having the extra couple of days. But, you know, that's part of it. It's football. You know, Ohio U's coming on a short week as well. I'm sure they have injuries. I'm sure that they don't really care if we have injuries or not. So, you know, there's no excuses there. Whoever's healthy and whoever we can throw in there to go play, we're going to go play. We know we've got a great challenge ahead of us. We know we've got a good team, a team that, you know, in my opinion, might be the best in the east side of our league, and certainly we'll, you know, be right there in the thick of it at the end, competing for the east side of the championship, you know, the east, to represent the east in the championship game. So, very well coached team. You know, Frank Solich is, his resume speaks for itself. So, you know, certainly looking forward to a great game tomorrow night.
Yeah, and what does the quick turnaround do from your point of view? I mean, this is kind of the shifting into the MACtion, because after this, a couple of Wednesday games as part of the weekday November MACtion games. But you don't really get this, the kind of bye week that some other schools are getting. You got this quick turnaround this week. What does that do from your standpoint, especially as coach and even the players? Because one thing I've learned from talking to you guys over the course of the last couple seasons is football players in season, creatures of habit. So what exactly will be changing over the course of this week with the days just simply not being there for normal prep?
Well, I think you hit it. You're creatures of habit, but you can't get offended if your habits are tweaked and turned a little bit. You gotta be able to adjust, and it is what it is. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're not going to play the games. So of course you are. So you got to take it in stride. You got to adjust your schedule. You got to make sure you still handle the class workload as a student athlete. You got to go to class. You got to do your work. You know, you can't use football as an excuse to put academics on the back burner or to just get lazy in your habits. You got to maintain your routine, even though the games change and the times that we're playing change. That's all good. We got to handle it and deal with it.
I would say, at least it sounds like one positive, though, even with the quick turnaround, coaches, at least you guys are at home, so you don't have the travel on top of all that.
Yeah, that makes a difference. And, being able to play that game last Saturday at noon was huge, because you got some extra time Saturday night to, you know, jump into OU or, you know, get started on them and really put to bed that Central Michigan game. And, as opposed to playing a night game here and, you know, not getting off the field till midnight, you know, those extra hours certainly helped. And it certainly helped from a recovery standpoint and getting our guys back and, you know, get them transitioned into a new week. And, sometimes that's the tough part about college football. It's really hard to win college football games. And then when you do win them, sometimes you don't have really any time to sit back and think and be proud of what you just accomplished.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. It's the Ohio Bobcats, quite possibly the favorites in the MAC East, coming to the Glass Bowl tomorrow night, Thursday night, 7:30, the kickoff for this one. I just mentioned it. You mentioned it, that they are one of the favorites right now in that East division. So this is another solid football team coming in. What are some of your game plans to try to stop them?
Yeah, we got to do a great job of stopping the run, and then we got to run the football efficiently ourselves. I mean, I think they're one of a few teams left in the country that have, you know, yet to give up 1,000 yards rushing on the season. So, you know, they got a very stout rush defense, and you know, and again, like I said, this will be a well-coached team. This isn't a team that's going to beat themselves. So, you know, we got to force them to make some mistakes, and the only way to do that is to play sound yourself and, you know, handle the situational part of the football game, be good on third down and scoring touchdowns in the red zone, and then certainly getting off the field on third down and, you know, flip it to the other side defensively. Got to make them kick field goals when they get down there.
It is the Toledo Rockets and the Ohio Bobcats, another solid matchup at the Glass Bowl. It's a Thursday night affair this week, 7:30, the kickoff time for that one. Coach, best of luck out there tomorrow night, and hope when we reconvene next week, we're talking about yet another Toledo Rockets W.
Thanks, Jim.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Cannell, joining us here on the Extravaganza. And yeah, they don't get the turnaround. Bowling Green, for example, they are on bye week, so they get the extra days, as we talked with head coach Mike Jinks the other day about that. But the Rockets do not get that. And at least, and coach kind of admitted it too, when I asked him, at least it's a positive that on top of the short week and everything, at least they don't have to travel to Athens. And I'm not saying it's not like it's super duper far, like say, you know, going across country for a road game like that BYU game. But it's still nice to be in, you know, in your own beds and then in your own stadium, especially on a week where it's a quick turnaround. And that's going to be one of the more interesting things to watch. As coach mentioned, they had some linemen go down on the offensive side of the ball second half of that Central Michigan win. And with the extra normal days not being there because it's the quick turnaround from a Saturday to a Thursday, yeah, game time decision. If some of those guys are not able to go, that will have a little bit of effect on what the Rockets are able to do offensively. I mean, there's still, we all know how solid this football team still is. And of course, they did all but 3 points of their damage in that second half when they were starting to lose some of those linemen. But it's a situation where if they had the normal week, most of those guys would probably still be there, but there'll be game time decisions for the Rockets for this one tomorrow night. And it's the Ohio Bobcats. And that's a tough team in the sense that, look, the two divisions in the Mid-American Conference, they are what they are. In the West, really, it's pretty solid. And the worst overall record, believe it or not, is Northern Illinois at 2-6. Even Ball State's 4-4. Everybody else has a winning record. Central and Eastern now 5-3. And of course, the Rockets at 6-1 with Western Michigan now 20th ranked in the nation because they are up to 8-0. That game, of course, is going to be coming up on Black Friday, November 25th in Kalamazoo. That could very well decide the West Division. So we know how tough that is. Meanwhile, in the East, with BG having fallen off this year, the only above 500 teams are Akron and those Ohio Bobcats, who are both tied for first in the MAC East. I'd have to favor right now Ohio, even with a loss, say, tomorrow to the Rockets, to still be the favorite in that Eastern Division. So it's another tough opponent, a program that's been doing some things the last couple of years. Really, for all practical purposes, in the last 5 to 8 years, the East Division in the Mid-American Conference has been Bowling Green or Ohio. You know, really nobody else, for the most part. And with Bowling Green down, the door opened for the Bobcats again. But Akron's having a pretty decent season. But it doesn't stop solid opponents for the Toledo Rockets. In fact, looking at their schedule after this one, Wednesday the 2nd at Akron. So you get both favorites in the East Division back-to-back. Then it's at Northern Illinois, who, despite their struggles this year, 2-6 and only one MAC win right now. That's still Northern Illinois. And when we're talking about Northern Illinois and the Rockets, it's the monkey on the Rockets' back right now that they haven't beaten that team in a number of years. And that's why Northern Illinois keeps going back to the Mid-American Conference title game instead of the Rockets, because the Rockets can't beat them. So despite the drop-off this season for the Huskies, you got to figure that's going to be an interesting affair, just because on some level, no matter how good the Rockets are or how bad Northern Illinois may be, you still have to go out there and prove you can actually beat that football team. And we haven't seen that, of course, the last couple of years. Then after that, the final game at the Glass Bowl on Wednesday the 16th against Ball State. And then, as I mentioned, Black Friday, November 25th at Western Michigan, who is right now 20th ranked in the AP poll. And the way it's playing out right now, barring an upset loss for either of those two teams, that'll be the game that decides the MAC West Division title for all practical purposes. So it's a tough schedule for the Toledo Rockets down the stretch. Nothing gets easier. We know how funky sometimes Mid-American Conference football absolutely can be. So the Rockets are going to be in an interesting position. Very interested to see how they come out of the gate, honestly. And and I know that that might sound cliche, but with only 4 days between games, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and today, Wednesday, before a game tomorrow, you don't have that quick turnaround. It's affecting things on the injury front. I'm sure there's a few Bobcats who were a little banged up that had they had a normal 7 days instead of four, that they'd be feeling a lot better. But you have a chance where you're going to be maybe down some linemen, mostly because of the quick turnaround. So very interested to see how the Rockets come out, you know, at the start of this one. Same with Ohio, because, you know, either side would love to get an early lead in this game, play from in front, and it's really hard to say who has more to lose in this game because, as I mentioned, Ohio and Akron are tied in the East, and if you're the Rockets, you're undefeated in league play because the one loss was that at BYU game, but you don't want to suddenly start going a game behind in division standings to a Western Michigan team that is absolutely right now deserving of their ranking. You go, no matter what level you're at, no matter what conference level you're at, if the calendar is nearly flipping to November and you're still undefeated, you absolutely deserve to be ranked. And of course, Western Michigan now 20th. So it's going to be a tough road to hoe for the Rockets down the stretch here, and it all starts tomorrow night at the Glass Bowl against the Ohio Bobcats. That's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Stick around. Drive Time with Mike Miller is coming up next, and then, of course, due to the rain chances they're having in Cleveland, as we know the rain around here in Toledo today so far, they have moved the World Series up. It was originally an 8 o'clock first pitch, 7 o'clock pregame time, back all that up an hour. So Drive Time coming up next from 5 until 6. And then we're going to go right into ESPN Radio's coverage of Game 2 of the World Series tonight. Trevor Bauer, hoping that the finger stitches don't come off again. He'll be opposed by Jake Arrieta. 7 o'clock first pitch, 6 o'clock the pregame time, right here on 106.5 The Ticket. Drive Time, Mike Miller is next. Stick around, then World Series after that. We'll talk about it all tomorrow when we talk to you then.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.